This episode is brought to you by HH Bespoke Spirits, a fashionable portfolio of unique spirits, including bespoke gin, rum, and vodka, inspired by the rich cultural history and distinctive style of the Harlem Renaissance. Learn more at hhbespokespirits.com.
This week on Meetin' 3, we bring you stories about how Gen Z is different from their millennial predecessors through the lens of food.
My knowledge of alcohol didn't really come from like Bud Light commercials or like Project X.
Yeah, and that's my gripe with the platform as well, is that all these DIY videos, cooking videos, they're 20 seconds.
What's one food item from your childhood that you wish you could have today? Dunkaroos, because they don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Although, the Dunkaroos Twitter was activated again a year ago, so it's only a matter of time. They've tweeted a couple times, it's pretty hype.
Listen to Meetin' 3, HRN's food news and storytelling roundup wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest is Alessia Antonori. We'll talk to Alessia about life during COVID-19, Antonori wines, women and wine, and more. We'll taste the 2018 Guado Altasso Il Bucciate for our weekly wine sip. I'm your host, Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Alessia Antonori is a 26th generation winemaker at Marchese Antonori. The Antonori family has been committed to the art of winemaking for over six centuries, since 1385, and is one of Italy's oldest and biggest family-run businesses. Alessia holds a degree in viticulture and is vice president of the family winery alongside her two sisters, Allegra and Alberia, and her iconic dad, Piero Antonori. Welcome to the Grape Nation, Alessia.
Good afternoon, Sam.
We were scheduled to have you live in studio this week because you were in New York, but due to the COVID-19 virus, we're doing a remote broadcast via Zencaster, and you are currently in Italy. Is that correct?
Yes. Unfortunately, we cannot be together because of what is happening. Yeah. It's very unfortunate.
Where are you on the other side of Italy now?
So I'm in Rome in this moment, and okay. I've flied back more than a month ago. So,
okay. We'll talk about that a little. Your dad, Piero, has been on The Grape Nation. I had the great fortune to sit down with him in person, and he gave us a little history of the family and of the winery. But I want you to give us a little background on your journey in life and wine that got you to your current position at Marchese Antonori. So tell me a little about how you got to where you are.
Okay, so I'll make it a little bit shorter, but obviously, you have interviewed my father, you know a little bit of the history of the family, which goes back more than 600 years, and I'm part with my other two sisters of the 26th generation of the company. And for us, you know, this is a very important milestone and also a big challenge to try always to maintain this for the future generations, which we will talk also about that later. Regards my life in the family industry, it goes back when I was, I would say, since when I was 6-7 years old, that because I remember that moment when I first sipped not a glass of wine, but if I put my thumb in my finger in a glass of wine that my father gave me for Christmas, and then I sipped that on my tongue, and I had my first experience in the wine world, and that I remember very well. So that was 6-7 years old, and after that I've always been participating at, you know, at the wine fairs, also trips with my father during the summer when he went to visit the other wine areas that were also abroad, not only in Italy, and that maybe sometimes luckily we also fell in love, like areas like Napa Valley or like Chile, where we have an estate too in the Maipo area. So also the experiences abroad. And then I started during the summer when I had some free periods from school. I also done, I followed some harvest because, you know, in Italy, schools start a little bit later. So I had the opportunity to have the experience of the harvest in August, beginning of September, which was always a good experience. And this until I was 18. And then when I turned 18, I had the options because my father never really obliged us, neither myself or neither my sisters, to work in the company. But he gave us always options. And my option, since I was very passionate about history of art, was to go to University of Art in Florence, or if not, follow more the winemaking aspect in going in agriculture university to the agricultural university in Milan. So I gave him the two options, and I have to say I really liked also the idea to go a little bit outside of Florence to live, and he liked that, and so I started with that experience, and it was really one of the most beautiful experiences of my life during the university, during college. And I was living in Milan and also outside Milan to experiment a little bit in the winemaking and vineyard management. And that was from 18 to 23 years old. And after that, I started to work.
You studied viticulture, right?
Viticulture and winemaking, yes.
Right.
And I was really the only one in the family to go to university and to specialize in something, viticulture and winemaking. And after that, I had no doubts that I wanted to work in the company, in the family company. And it happened immediately after I finished university. And the beginning, it was more, I would say, a more winemaking experience. For many years, and I looked after a few companies, a few estates that we have from our estate in Chianti Classico, obviously as first experience, to our estate in Guadaltasso in Bulgari. And then also one of the most interesting experiences too was in Franciacorta, where we produce our sparkling wine, Method Champenoise. And then I launched that winery and those wines that we produced from that estate in 1999. And after that, since it's a family company, I thought it was very important to know a little bit different aspects of a company that wasn't only winemaking, so specialized. And so I asked to do a little bit of, to look after more sales and marketing. And I went to live in Asia and was looking after Middle East, Asian, Australia markets for marketing and communication and also sales for 5 years. And after that incredible experience, I went to the U.S. for 3 years to look after the U.S. market, because obviously for us, the U.S. market is the most important market after the Italian market. And
what year was that?
It was
about
13 years ago. So
okay.
About 2000
or like
2008. 2007,
right.
2010, yeah.
Right.
And then I went back. I had two children, and I came to live in Rome because my husband is from Rome. And I look after a winery that we own in the city of Rome and for many years. And then lately, where in that winery, I really took care of being a winemaker. I went back to my roots of winemaking and
nice.
Vineyard management and viticulturist. And then I had the opportunity for the last 3 years to live, to go back to the U.S. and to look after our property in Napa Valley called Antica, and also the U.S. Market, which, as I said, is very important for us.
Were you based out of New York when you were in the U.S.?
I've always been based out of New York 12 years ago and also now because, right. You know, it's very comfortable because you are on the East Coast. It's closer to Italy. And,
right.
And then from there, you can travel very well and easily.
You mentioned offline to me that you left to go back to Italy. Obviously, you went back because of the pandemic to be with the family, true?
Yes, absolutely, yes. I have to say that obviously the business aspect was the most important one, but I finished that I couldn't really do a lot of business in this period. And also when my son was homeschooling and at a certain point, they decided to don't reopen the schools anymore. At that point, I thought it was important to come back to Italy to also support my country and my company too and my family.
But you implied to me that you may not come back so quickly. Is that true or not necessarily?
There's a chance because the idea was to do a few years. And since my son finished part of the elementary school, it could be that we will be back here a few years and then maybe we will come back. So for me, it's really a journey back and forth with the US and Italy, because as I mentioned, for us, it's an extremely important market. It's very important, you know, the relations that the family has also beyond, obviously, the ones of the sales and importer and distributor. So we think that it's an extremely important role to have a family member in the country, in the United States.
Right.
So we will see, you know, what is happening nowadays. It's also in a
play it by ear.
Yeah, exactly. Play by ear. And the good thing is that I have a beautiful house in New York and a beautiful house in Rome. I'm extremely lucky. And so I can go back and forth without big, it's not a big effort for me.
Sounds great. Now, you mentioned before the sparkling wine. You were involved with that product. That was a launch. Did the family have a sparkling wine property before that, or you really launched it?
No, so the, absolutely.
Montenesa, what's it called?
Montenesa is the state, and it's in the heart of Franciacorta. Our experience as a family in sparkling wines goes back a lot of years because it was the project of my great-grandfather and my grandfather that really were fascinated about method champenoise, so second fermentation in the bottle wines, and they experimented a lot in our cellars in the Chianti Classico. At the beginning with not great results, and then we asked a chef de cave, a French chef de cave, to come to help us out, and then we started to really produce our Natur, which was a wine that has always been produced in our cellars in the Chianti Classico, but at the time we were purchasing the grapes from northern Italy. So we decided after more than 100 years to really start to, you know, to focus on one area. And the most regarded area, in our opinion, for sparkling wines, method champenoise, is the Franciacorta area, which is an area between Milan and Venice in the Brescia, close to the Brescia, the town of Brescia. And from there, we, in 99, we purchased this beautiful estate from which we're producing all our sparkling wines, method champenoise, from there.
Great. I want to ask you how the pandemic has affected the family business. I want you to get into that a little and how it has affected you personally. I mean, you talked about it. I mean, you picked yourself up and went back to Italy. But tell me, you know, because Italy got hit first and it got hit hard. And then the U.S. got hit very hard. And, you know, it's an important market. So tell me some of the effects, you know, to this date that the pandemic has had on the business, you know, being that you go back to the 1300s, how are you handling it now?
I think that for Italy has been very hard, especially in northern Italy, because obviously the regions that were more affected were the ones in the north. In Tuscany and the southern of Tuscany, we have been in a lockdown all over Italy. So in a way of business, obviously it affected all the Italian market. But obviously in all the rest, it affected mostly the northern part of Italy. The difference that I've noticed between, for example, the Italian market, business-wise, I'm saying, and the U.S. market, for example, is that, Italy had the experience that it has on retailers, and especially the online business, is not as strong as in the U.S. So in Italy, we have continued to do a little bit of business, but really little, with, supermarkets and wine shops that were delivering here. You couldn't, they weren't open, the wine shops. So that was the difference with, for example, for New York, between New York and Italy. And So it affected a lot because our business as Antinori, especially in Italy, is mostly the restaurants, the restaurant business. So the
on-premise.
Yes, on-premise, on-trade, yes. So
right, and those guys are virtually, shut down.
Yeah. Here, everything has been shut down until 1 week ago. And you see that everything is starting again, which is, I have to say, it's a beautiful sensation because there's the hope, that everything will restart. And the situation seems very good in this moment. Obviously, we are not out of it, but we are hoping that, by July, everything will be, I'm not saying back to the normal, but semi back to the normal. Said this,
right.
I think that, what we are missing here in this country, in Italy, is the tourism, because for now, we have started to open, especially for the European countries, the frontiers a few days ago. So we'll start to see, we hope, tourism soon, because this is very important for our business and especially for our country. So,
well, you're going into a good season. I mean, the summer, it's a good time to open up, right?
Time, and everyone also very safely wants to really start to enjoy a little bit more life and outdoors, especially. So that is
what
is happening in Italy.
Go ahead.
Sorry, in the U.S. instead, to finish it up, in the U.S. instead, we saw that obviously, our business was mostly, well, it was not mostly, it was half and half, 50% on premise and 50% off premise. But what we saw and what we did quite well, I have to say, is all the online, which has helped us a lot. And we discovered a lot of new good partners that we didn't know in the past. And the US is certainly obviously suffering a lot. And our business is suffering a lot there too. But we saw some differences between the two countries, and the old world and the new world, I would say, on that aspect, because the online mentality in the U.S. was, people were more readier of the online business more than, I would say,
right,
especially Italy, more than Europe.
So does that mean that in Italy, more than the United States, you're going to have to focus and sharpen your online presence a little more, make it a little better?
I think that I would say that it's not, the Italian market is less ready than the US market for the online, but certainly this, what happened in the last months, will make it faster and it will grow faster. But it compared, probably, I would say that the US was readier for this this business, this type of business.
Right. Right. The Italian market, as far as use and habit, is a little behind the U.S. as far as how they use and perceive online, correct?
Absolutely, yes. In my opinion.
Now, what about the effects on the vineyards, actually making wine, things like that? Did the pandemic have an effect with labor?
No,
getting materials?
No, not really. We have been continuing to work in with a 10-15% of labor, but what when we were working outdoors, in Italy, we could work. Agriculture went on and it was same in part open. So the season has been a great season until now. So finger crossed that it will continue until the end of the harvest. So it should be a very good year. So that is part of it, at least that.
Right. I guess timing is good because if it was during harvest or, you know, any busy time, it would have more of an effect, right?
Yes. Let's hope that, it will continue like that. Yes.
Yeah. I think it's going in the right direction. Yeah. The family has been known, you know, especially your dad, for being bold and innovative. There's a whole list of things, you know, that are cited to Antinori and things that your dad did in winemaking, marketing, and the list goes on and on. Do you think there'll be changes to how you do your business because of the pandemic? Other than getting up to speed, are there changes that you're going to have to make?
I think that what happened, especially in our country and in our business, for example, or in a winery, in a property like ours, I think it will, in certain cases, I think you go back to the basics. Sometimes, when everything goes well, as luckily we have been doing quite well in the last years, you take many things for granted in general. And so I think this is very important for everybody who works with us, colleagues and our family too. I think that's very important. And also, I think that it took time for every one of us to think a little bit more on the future. And I think also to make our businesses and also our country maybe using a little bit less bureaucracy, because Italy has always been very overwhelmed by bureaucracy, too much in my opinion. So to make it a little bit cleaner and a little bit more effective and maybe sometimes a little bit easier and practical, which is very important. So I think it's a lesson for everybody at the end.
Right. Well said. Yeah. You talked about how important restaurants are to, the Antinori business. How going forward can you help restaurants?
I think that our friends, the restaurateurs, which have been friends since ever, I hope most of them will remain there, will continue their businesses because it's fundamental for us and for them especially. That it's a collaboration. So they will need help, we'll give them help. And I think those are the relations that you have to maintain. And for us, our priority.
Right. That sounds good. It's extremely rare for three women to be running a winery, any size, anywhere, no less in Italy. Do you think as women, you and your sisters have a different approach to the business?
I think women in general can give different approaches. And I think it's right and normal that it's like that in every business. In the wine business, I've always found that being a very, especially in Italy, very male concentrated business, it certainly gave a lot of difference in the last 15, 20 years. And because now there are many women involved in the wine businesses in general. And I say that because not only under certain aspects, but under many, for example, sales, for example, in winemaking, in marketing. So I think that it's essential to have also women in our businesses and in the wine business. So I see that in the future, there should be, women and men. We are three sisters, and so it's something extremely, I would say, different and not probably expected from my father at the time. Especially because we are talking about, the 70s, the 80s when we were born. And in that period, women weren't really considered part of the wine business in general. So for him, it has been also very challenging because he wasn't sure that if we were interested in working in the business. So my sister Albiera was the first one, and she started immediately after she finished, she graduated her high school. But then there were other two. So, you know, it wasn't obvious. But then he saw that we were passionate and we really liked to be part of the family and part of the business. And so now we are looking at, on the 27th generation. So that's
right.
The future.
So there's definitely been a generational shift, certainly at Antonori. And, you know, as I talk to people during the years of the show, there's just been a generational shift in wine, which is a nice thing. Do you feel that the gender shift towards women has been quick enough and big enough? I mean, you cited that, you know, more women are in wine sales, all of that stuff. But do you feel that
I think it's
fair and equitable?
It's I'm a woman, so it's never
right.
No, absolutely. There's been a big shift towards also the women figure. And I think, especially in the last 10, 15 years, there are many women involved in our business. And I think...
I think a lot of women that came into the business came in because they were in spousal situations. I think what's nice is now there's generational growth, of which, you know, you guys are the best example. So that's a great thing. Let's talk a little wine. I've noticed talking to, you know, I talk to a lot of sommeliers, I talk to a lot of winemakers, journalists. Chianti Classico has always been a great wine, but I get this feeling and sense that it's coming back into favor. Not that it ever really went out, but it's having a moment. You know, when I ask sommeliers about wines, you know, they start talking about favorite wines being Chianti Classicos, and you know, there's well-made wines and there's great values there. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Yes. And in fact, it's the biggest challenge for our generation, the 26th, and also probably the 27th and maybe onwards, to go back to the Chianti Classico. So in our family, you know, we come from the Chianti Classico. So it's really our heart, our soul. We are from there, and we have always been focusing on those estates in the Chianti Classico that we own since many centuries. But you know, when my father came along and he went a little bit against the rules in the 1970s with the creation of the wine that you probably know, Tignanello. We started to really, and it was the beginning of a category of the Super Tuscans.
Explain to people quickly what. You know, what a Super Tuscan is in Italy, you know, compared to the traditional wines for many years.
Yes. So Super Tuscan is certainly a category that has been extremely innovative in the 1970s, late 1960s. My father is one of the figures that has been very important in this revolution, or I would call it maybe also renaissance of Italian high quality wines, because at the time Italy was known after the Second World War to be producing more quantity than quality. And my father really believed that he wanted to focus on quality. So what he did with the Tignanello was that he went against the rules and he declassified the Chianti Classico. He produced a wine that, and he declassified the Chianti Classico to table wine, vino da tavola. And because he decided to produce a wine with a blend that wasn't admitted by law by the Chianti Classico. So, and that blend was Sangiovese, for in that case of the Tignanello, was 80% Sangiovese, 20% of Cabernet. And by law, only 15% of other grape varieties were admitted. So this couldn't be called, this wine, a Chianti Classico. So he decided to do that, and it was in Italy, not many people understood it, but then he came to the United States, introduced it to the market, and they called it Super Tuscan, because it was a big wine from being a vino da tavola, being from all over Tuscany. In our case, it was only from the Chianti Classico. But
right, and they be- They became wildly popular.
Yeah, it's and now and then after immediately was a category. So the Super Tuscan that we produced was the first Super Tuscan from the Chianti Classico area. But in Tuscany, there have been great other producers that have produced a great wine. Now it's a category since many years. So going back to what I was saying before, is that we started to focus on a blend of Sangiovese and Cabernet, always from that area. So now we obviously we are continuing to produce our wines like the Super Tuscans, but in the last years we are going back more and more on that area. We have three estates: one is called Peppoli, one Tignanello, one Badia Passignano. But lately, in the last years, we purchased also other estates in the other areas of the Chianti Classico, because we want to really show the different expressions of the Sangiovese grape variety, which is for me one of the most interesting varieties in produced in the world, and also most challenging grape varieties. So my dream is in a few years to show in a tasting and a map the different areas of the Chianti Classico and how they can be different and give different results and different expression of one grape variety, only maybe sometimes being a few miles far away from each other. So I think this is very important, and I believe that, as you were mentioning, SOMs are more and more interested because I think consumers are more... certainly have a little bit more know-how and more they know more about you know, they want to know a little bit more, they want to learn a little bit more. So I think that that is very important, because Italy can show how unique certain grape varieties can give great results from that.
So you mentioned a few estates. I mean, it would probably take about two shows to talk about all the Antinori estates. Tell me, I mean, there's at least eight estates that I know of. Tell me, is there anything new going on? I think you mentioned just, you know, a few seconds ago, you know, how Chianti Classico is a priority and, you know, how you can express it from different regions. Anything else new going on?
I think that we are always experimenting, because our family is known to be extremely traditional, but also very innovative. And experimentation is really it's in our DNA all the time. So there are many experimentations and new different grape varieties that we are always trying. But as I mentioned, Sangiovese is our real true priority. And right. Show these differences in the future and different expressions is really important. So I think in this generation, with my sisters, is our priority to show how the great wines from the Chianti Classico can evolve also on time and also give great results immediately.
Are you always looking at acquisition, or you now work with what you have?
You never know with my father, because...
Right, if something cool comes up.
Exactly, and also because, as I was mentioning at the beginning, when I've done a lot of traveling with him, and I saw him also falling in love with these new wine areas, especially, you know, abroad. And so for us, it's...
Well, talk about that. Talk about some of the properties that are outside of Tuscany quickly.
Outside of Tuscany and in Italy, or outside?
The whole world.
Yeah. So a few words. Outside of Tuscany, we have a beautiful property called Prunotto, which is in the Alba area. And my sister Albiera has always taken care of it, being the president. And it's a winery that's a very special winery, very traditional winery in the Alba area, producing obviously Barolo and Barbarescos. And
Prunotto,
exactly.
Right.
And then also we have a very important property for us, which is called Tormaresca. And it's important because we started 20 years ago, and I went there as a trip with my father the first time. And Puglia, it's situated in Puglia, which is the new emerging region in Italy.
Right.
And at the time, it was really concentrating on table grapes and quantity production. So we want to do something different. And we started to produce very interesting Aglianicos, Negramaros, and Primitivo from there. And I think that is also a very interesting region for the future. And this is what regards Italy, if I'm not forgetting some parts. And then we go abroad. Abroad, as I was mentioning, my father really fell in love with a property in Napa Valley in the beginning of the 80s. The property is called Antica, which is the short name also for Antinori, California, and also means Antico, which is old in Italian. And it's on the hillside of Napa, so a different area from the Napa Valley on the Atlas Peak District. And in my opinion, it's one of the most beautiful estates that we own. That's very special. And from there, we produce a wine that is, as we like it, is a blend of old world and new world. And I think this is very important in all our experiences and our also collaborations that we have outside Italy, for example. It's a matter of exchanging opinions and learning also from other very interesting and great wine areas of the world. So the experience of Napa, the experience in Chile, in the Maipo area, with a winery called Araste Pirque, where we produce Cabernet, Carmenere, and Sauvignon, for example. Or Washington State, with a great collaboration with our importer and producer, Chateau Saint-Michel, with a winery called Solare. So, you know, these are experiences, and they are very, very important. And also they give the idea of what our family is really like, because we could be many Florentines, very maybe also maybe closed as mentality. Instead, my father has never been that, like that. He has been very curious and went abroad in the 1960s and brought back what he learned from abroad to the Chianti Classico, for example.
He's put down a big footprint. Alessia, we have to take a quick break. We're talking to Alessia Antonori from Marchese Antonori. When we come back, there's a bunch of other things that you're working on that I want to talk to you about. You're listening to The Grape Nation on Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by HH Bespoke Spirits, a fashionable portfolio of unique spirits, including bespoke gin, rum, and vodka. The family behind the award-winning boutique and clothing brand Harlem Haberdashery has expanded to distill spirits inspired by the rich cultural history and distinctive style of the Harlem Renaissance. The Black and family-owned HH Bespoke Spirits are available at bars, restaurants, and retailers across the United States. Learn more at hhbespokespirits.com and follow them at hhbespokespirit.
Okay, we're back. We're back with my guest, Alessia Antonori. Alessia, I wanted to talk to you about something that is, I think, close and dear to you, and I think it's something you're working on now. The family has always loved and supported the arts. And I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, you're working on an interesting project. Can you tell me about it?
I've been very lucky in my life because I had two passions. One, obviously, is wine. And the second one is art, contemporary art. So I've been very lucky because I can, in a way, link the two passions together and work with them. In a way, it's not working. It's a pleasure. So, you know, better than that, you can ask for nothing else. So, yes, when we built many years ago our new winery in the Chianti Classico, my father asked me if I could take care also of the artistic aspects, because we as a family have always been collecting art since the Renaissance. And my family, one of my ancestors, has always been involved in commissioning pieces, art pieces by great artists in the 1500s. So my father wanted to show this because we believe that wine is art. And also, you know, our family has always been surrounded by amazing art. Imagine living in Florence. It has been like that. Sure. And we live in Palazzo Antinori, which is, you know, built by two great architects. So for us, it was very important to show this and represent this. So I showed in a small, I would say, chronological room, the art that we collected throughout the years and throughout the centuries. But then I thought also that, you know, what we are showing was part of the past, and the building in which we were showing it, the winery, was certainly very contemporary, and that all this one day will be the past. So I thought it was very important to show also what we were doing from there onwards with contemporary artists, and that we believed in the project, in the art project in general. So in that moment, we decided to start the Antinori Art Project. And with the opening of the winery, we asked three artists two artists to do some site-specific projects. And my idea was every year to ask one artist to come to the winery and understand a little bit our project and what we were doing in our world too, and to a little bit, I would say, focus on certain themes. Themes that could be obvious ones like nature, archives, history, tradition, time. Most of them, I have to say, that came throughout the years were very interested also in time, for example, and obviously history too, and also nature. So I think that these were the themes that attracted most of the artists that came. And we have done amazing projects, all site-specific, are all around the winery. So when you come to visit the winery, since it's open to the public, you can see, obviously, all the
projects. So it's a permanent showing. It's a permanent collection.
Yes.
That anyone who visits can see it. And that's in the Chianti Classico. Has your dad turned 80 yet?
Yes, he has turned 2 years.
Okay. Is he pulling back a little, or is he as active as ever?
He's very, very active, and we are very happy that he is active. In the last year and a half, he decided to pass the presidency to my sister Albiera. So we are, me and my sister Allegra, we are vice presidents, and my father and my sister Albiera is president of the company. But he is an honorary president, and he is extremely active, extremely present, and lucky. We're very lucky that it's like that.
That's great. Like I said, I had the opportunity to sit with him and then saw him again at the Naples Winter Wine Festival. Mm. And it's always a pleasure. And whenever I'm with him, he's always running off to play golf, which is nice to see that he's still playing.
What?
Alessia, we do a thing called the wine list. We do it every week on the show. We ask all our guests the same questions. I'm going to give you 5 questions. Don't dwell on them. It's spontaneous. We post these answers on our social media because our listeners love to hear, you know, what our guests are drinking and what they're doing. So the first question is, what are you drinking now? What's in your fridge? What are you trying? What's interesting you? You know, have the seasons pushed you to different wines? Tell me what you're drinking now.
Season is pushing me more on white wines or rosé wines, we are in June, so obviously it's more in pushing in that direction. I'm liking more and more in the last years very fresh white wines, possibly also with stainless steel, young style, very fruity. My husband convinced me on that a few years ago.
Well, give me an example of something that you like.
Like wines from Northern Italy, from Alto Adige, for example, white wines from Alto Adige, Pinot Bianco, for example, from Alto Adige, some Rieslings also from Austria that are maybe are not as fresh because they have more,
right,
but also very interesting. So more particular and small I would say smaller producers that are wines that are fresh. I really love the freshness of white wines, because I think, especially in the summer, they're perfect, you know, with a nice fish, seafood.
Well, that's the next question. So good answer on the first one. Question number two is, do you have a favorite wine and food pairing? Not something you eat every night or all the time, but is there just something food and wine wise that's just the perfect pairing?
I love French, for example, sparkling wines like Franciacorta, for example, like a Sauternes, which is like a Blanc de Blanc, with a nice seafood tempura, which is great.
The sparkling goes great with fried food.
Yes, especially Franciacorta, because they produce, the wines are very mineral, so they go extremely well with food.
Right. Good answer. All right, third question. And this may be tough, so I think I may stick to Italy and your environs. Do you have a favorite wine restaurant or bar, wine bar, you know, where the selection is great, the people are terrific, you know, they're educated, the environment is just fun to be in? Are there any places like that? Florence, Chianti, Rome?
One of my favorite restaurants, I would say, in the world is a seafood restaurant, talking about summer. And it's called La Pineta, and it's a great...
Spell it for me.
La, and then Pineta, right, which is P-I-N-E-T-I. T-A, Pineta. And it's in the Bolgheri area, in Bibbona exactly, so 10 minutes from our property in Guadaltasso by car. And it's a special place because it's a quite small place and it's on the beach. And it's special in our hearts because we grew there since we were little. We went there and it was, you know, less known many years ago, and now it became famous. Unfortunately, the owner passed away last year, which was very sad, but his kids are continuing. And so it's very important, you know, to support them because it's a really unique place.
That's exactly the answer I was looking for. All right, fourth question. Do you have a favorite all-time wine? When I started asking the question, it pointed more towards what was the rarest, most expensive wine that you ever tasted. But the question has morphed into, you know, what is an important wine in your life? What was a life-changing wine? You know, is there a notable wine that you had, you know, through your travels?
I've been president for a few times of this organization called Primum Famiglia Vini, which are 12 of the most, I would say, known, prestigious wine families in the old world, so European. There was also, at the time, also Opus One, but they have to be owned by a family, so unfortunately they're not anymore with us. So we have... beyond the many other things that we do, but we have a treat that every Christmas we exchange wine and between each others. So I had the opportunity to taste some unique wines since part of members are like from Vega Sicilia to Chateau Mouton to Drouet, right, to Port Roger, to, you know, the great wine producers. So certainly, yes, I had the opportunity maybe to don't taste one particular wine, but of a certain vintage, but certainly many great producers that are family and friends for many Christmases.
I had the good fortune to attend the last one, which was at Le Bernardin in New York.
That I was. My sister was there.
And your sister was there. I got a chance to chat with her, and you are 100% correct, because the wines there, the quality, the names, the history, and what you know, mentioned was all the family members were there, you know, all the next generations, you know, along with, you know, the parents, which was very nice to see. So I think you're correct that any one of those wines at any time would be as good as anything. So I will take that as an answer. The last question, and I think you can help me. You know, because you've been in marketing and sales. I always ask my guests to recommend the best wines for around $15, $20 American. Now, here's the setup. My kids are in their mid-20s. You know, they're starting to go to dinner parties and they have to bring gifts. They can't bring a crappy supermarket bottle of wine and they can't afford a $40 bottle of wine. So what are good wines in the $15, $20, $22 range that are good value and good wine? And you can give me a category. You can give me a specific maker, like Muscadet in France is a white wine. It's delicious and it's cheap. What are you thinking of for a red and a white?
So you're not saying that they don't have to be U.S. wines. They can be from...
They could be anything.
All around the world.
Anything. I don't want to answer your question, but I think Chianti some way falls in there. But you answer the question.
I'm a little bit, in a position that is obviously pro-Italy, and especially in this moment, I have to say.
That's fine.
So absolutely.
It could be all Antinori, just be specific.
No, I think the category is very important. So the Chianti Classico, also the entry-level Chianti Classico, it doesn't have to be a Riserva.
Right.
But also the entry-level Chianti Classico is very...
So that's our red.
Yeah. And
now give me a white, similar type of wine.
For the whites, very interesting, a little bit more, I would say, particular. For example, is the Vermentino grape variety. I think the Vermentino from Tuscany or Liguria is extremely interesting. And they are good producers that are producing these fresh, nice, crispy white wines, perfect for the summer. So,
do you have a producer that you like?
I think more than one producer. I think the Bulgarieri is doing a lot, very well with the Vermentino in general. We were the first ones, but many others are producing really interesting Vermentinos in the area lately. So I think Vermentinos from Bulgari are very interesting.
As opposed to like Liguria, I agree with you. I think they're wonderful.
Sardinia, Liguria, they're very interesting. They're very different, but I think from Bulgari, they're doing a very good job.
They're great values. They're well made, the good ones, and they're great with food. Terrific job on that. Like I said, Alessia, I'm going to post those so people can get some insight into some of the wines that you've been tasting and drinking. We always wrap up the show, and this is one of my favorite parts of the show, with a segment called the Weekly Wine Sip, where every week we taste a different wine on air. For our weekly wine sip this week, of course, I asked if you would be so kind as to offer and recommend an Antinori wine. So you and I are going to be tasting the 2018 Guadualtasso Il Bruciato. That's Ilbruciato. Alessia, can you tell me a little more about this wine?
This wine has been one of the most successful wines of our family in the last 10, 15 years because the first vintage was 2002. It was a very difficult vintage because it was a very rainy vintage and we didn't produce the majority of our cru wines, our top wines. And we decided to, for example, Guadaltasso, which is one of our, at least we consider one of our top wines, we didn't produce it that vintage. So we decided to produce a second wine, as an experiment. And Bruciato means burnt, and it comes from a forest inside the property of Guadaltasso that has been burnt by a fire like 100, 200 years ago. And also, in my opinion, and I always say it, for me, it has been burnt on the market because this wine was sold as an experiment and we thought we would have sold all the production in 1 year to 1 year and a half. Instead, in 6 months, it was finished. The year after, 2003, where we produced a little bit less because it was a very warm vintage, it was all allocated before selling it. So it really was a great success. And because it was from Bulgari, and there was that type of category, there weren't so many wines produced at the time. And it was considered very well made. So luckily. So then we...
So now you make it every year.
Yeah, we make it every year. And it's booming. Also in the US, it's doing very well. And I'm very proud of that because I remember very well 12 years ago when I really pushed also our importer, our distributors to really believe in that wine. And now it's very successful.
All right. So let's evaluate it. Do you have some in front of you?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So let's give it a sniff and let's throw it over the tongue and let's evaluate it. So first of all, color. It's a deep, dark purple, right?
Deep purple. This wine is a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Syrah. So it has...
No Sangiovese?
No Sangiovese. In Bulgari, no Sangiovese. Okay. In the past, but we decided to focus on these grape varieties that were really the best, gave the best results in that area. And so you have that deep color from the Cabernet, and also... Right.
All right, so wait, don't get ahead of me. So put it up to your nose and tell me your descriptors you get on the nose for this particular vintage.
It's quite a concentration, also a little bit of violet, a little bit, but also a little bit of, I would say, a little bit of chocolate also. And
yes, dark fruits, right?
And dark fruits. It's a wine that can age.
I wanted to ask you that, even though it's not Guado or Tay.
No, it can age.
This is a wine you could put down for how long?
For a few years. I've tasted the other day. It was a 2011, I think, and it was very good still. So, you know, it's a wine that we don't want it really particularly to age, but it ages very well.
Right.
And now it's fine with
a couple of years.
Yeah,
on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And 2018 is quite young in a way, but you know, it's you can really appreciate it. So it's a good thing of this wine that you can appreciate. It can be a very structured wine, but also very easy to be drunk.
Right, so now raise your glass, throw it over your tongue, and the mouthfeel, how would you rate the mouthfeel? To me, it's a medium plus. What do you think?
It's a wine, yeah, I would say medium plus, and it's certainly a wine that you can taste the aftertaste, you know, which for a little...
All right, so tell me your palate descriptors on this wine. Are they similar to the nose, and are there different ones on the palate?
I would say that it's quite similar to the nose because that chocolate and also black fruits have you can feel, you can continue to taste that also in the palate, which
I agree with that.
Yeah,
tell me, you can answer this. Tell me what foods would properly be paired with this wine.
So obviously I'm talking more about Italian food, Tuscan.
What kind?
Tuscan food also. And for example, this is perfect with a nice pappardelle with wild boar with cinghiale, for example.
Right. It can hold up to the sauce.
Yes, absolutely, yes. I would say that it would be perfect also with, a nice chicken, so a lighter, lighter type of taste.
What about steak or a hamburger?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
Hamburger.
I just wanted to make sure.
It's a wine that can adapt for many situations and many tastes. So it's a wine that can be a younger style of wine, but it has an intense structure. So that's a great thing.
Yeah.
And also, it's a wine that has a great value for money. And
I agree with that. I'm glad that we're tasting this wine. We could have very easily tasted some terrific Chiantis, but this gets you to a level where it's not that expensive, but the quality far exceeds, cost. I mean, this is a special wine. So that's the 2018 Il Bruciato from Guado Tasso, from Antinori. Alessia, we have to wrap up. It's been almost an hour. Let me do a little closing, and I want to get some info from you. If you have a question, suggestion, wine happening, or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. Subscribe to the Grape Nation podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Follow us on Facebook at The Grape Nation. On Instagram, we're at SBenRuby. And on Twitter, we're at BenRuby. You could always use the hashtag The Grape Nation on both. As I mentioned earlier, we'll post Alessia's wine list answers. And I will also give you the information on our weekly wine sip, the Il Bruciato, on all our social media sites. Alessia, if we want to find you and Antinori Wines on social media, where should we look?
On our Instagram and also our Facebook, everything related also to the Chianti Classico winery, which is called Chianti Antinori, Marchese Antinori in the Chianti Classico website. So you will find everything there. And yeah, we are, you know, we are starting on the social media. We are not as efficient.
You're not where you should be.
I know. But, you know.
Well, get going on that because it's very important.
Very important. No, but we're doing a good job since
I will post, you know, the sites too, along with the wine list and the wine sip answers. I'll post all the other information. Alessia, I want to thank you very much for taking time out. I want everyone to realize that Alessia is sitting in Italy. I am in New York, and we're talking about a 6-hour difference. So Alessia is just about to hit midnight. So thank you for staying up and tasting wine with me. Thank you to our engineer, Amanda, and everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam Benrubi, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation.
Thanks, Sam. Thank you, and good evening. And
stay safe.
Don't
switch out yet. Just wait a couple of minutes. Amanda, are you there? All right, we just have to wait for Amanda to come on. I hope Alessia too.
The Grape Nation is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.